Welcome to Intention to Treat from the New England Journal of Medicine. I'm Rachel Gottbaum. Today, we're going to talk about CAR T, genetically engineered cells that have saved the lives of more than 30,000 patients with blood cancers. Since its approval a little more than 6 years ago, CAR T therapy has been used in patients whose chemotherapy treatment has failed. Now studies are underway using CAR T cells earlier in treatment and for other types of cancer. CAR T may also be effective for other diseases, such as autoimmune disorders like lupus. But recently, the FDA has learned that CAR T treatment may be unleashing secondary cancers. Although the numbers remain low, the agency is looking into how serious this problem may be and what it could mean for patients.
My name is Llewellyn Dunwell. When I was 66, I was diagnosed with large B-cell lymphoma. The doctor, he said, your cancer is very treatable, you know, so chances are you'll be cured. So I did the chemo. Each session was about 5 days. After the second session, the scan showed that new cancer cells were growing. They said the chemo wasn't working. And the doctor, you know, he said, not to worry. He said, there are other treatments that we can try. And one of them was CAR T. Even though I thought I was going to die, I was going to do everything I can to live. And I was dependent on the doctors to help me through that.
My name is Connor Johnson. I am a lymphoma specialist at Mass General, and I am Mr. Dunwell's doctor. Mr. Dunwell was referred to me because he had a form of high-grade B-cell lymphoma, and this had not, unfortunately, responded to our standard frontline chemotherapy. And so Mr. Dunwell was referred to me to consider CAR T-cell therapy for his lymphoma.
Dr. Johnson, he explained, he said they're going to pull your T cells, they're going to modify to fight the cancer, and then we're going to infuse it back into your body. And I said, let's do it. You know, I wanted to do it right away, you know, because this cancer was spreading and that was my main worry.
I do think for patients like Mr. Dunwell, not too long ago, we would have been in a pretty dire situation in terms of options. And because of CAR T cells, we had a treatment that Mr. Dunwell had the potential to tolerate and had a real possibility of putting his disease into remission and even potentially cure the disease.
So once they pull the T cells, we have to wait 3 weeks. And of course, I was a little bit worried that, you know, the cancer is growing. I can't wait 3 weeks, but, you know, there was no way around that. So I was in the hospital. I was very anxious, you know. They kept me updated every day. They say, you know, we're still waiting. The first sign that the cancer was retreating was probably a couple of weeks later when a PET scan was done. It was actually regressing. I also had a lump on my neck and shoulder, and that was also receding. So that was positive for me, you know, that the cancer was actually going away, that CAR T was working. There are no signs of cancer in my body. And if I go this long, 2 years without the cancer reappearing, chances are it won't reappear. Dr. Johnson told me that chances are the cancer wouldn't come back. The CAR T has actually caused another problem. The CAR T might have caused something called MDS, which is a problem with the bone marrow. My immune system is a little bit depleted.
MDS, or myelodysplastic syndrome, is a rare event after CAR T-cell therapy. It does sometimes require management, but given the rarity of the event, in my view, for any malignancy that we're considering CAR T-cell therapy for, the benefits of CAR T-cells outweigh the risks.
The MDS, from what I understand, can get worse, can develop into severe cancer. I'll deal with that if it happens. But right now, I'm very happy with where I am. And I look forward to tomorrow every day.
This is Intention to Treat from the New England Journal of Medicine. We're now joined by Dr. Peter Marks. He's director of the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research at the Food and Drug Administration, and Dr. Nicole Verdun. She's director of the Office of Therapeutic Products at the FDA, and also Dr. Oludapo Yeku. He's a medical oncologist at Massachusetts General Hospital and associate editor of NEJM Evidence. So Dr. Marks, I'd like to start with you. Can you briefly describe how chimeric antigen receptors, CAR T therapy, works?
CAR T cells are a relatively complicated therapy because they're derived from the individual who ultimately receives them. The white blood cells are taken and then lymphocytes are isolated. They are then treated with a gene therapy construct. The change that's made to the cells, the CAR T, it's a combination of an antibody and part of a T cell receptor. It essentially forces that T cell that now has that construct, when it sees the cancer cell, to react and kill it.
And what's exciting about CAR T therapy is it's not short-lived. It's not like chemotherapy. It's considered a living treatment. Can you explain what that is?
Here you have a living drug, a cell that is alive, that actually is able to attack another living cell, a cancer cell. It actually can move through tissues of the body, and when it sees that cancer cell, activates it. That activation causes it to ultimately kill the cell it comes in contact with.
Can you please give us a sense of how CAR T fits into cancer treatment today?
The CAR T cells are currently being used for hematologic malignancies, both non-Hodgkin's lymphomas and multiple myeloma. There are attempts right now to move up their use in terms of earlier stages of relapse. We've seen them salvage people who otherwise would have no alternative left for treatment.
So let's get a sense of how important CAR T is, how significant it is, and how it's changed practice and patient outcomes. Dr. Verdun?
So I think that the CAR T landscape really has been life-changing and life-altering for patients. In addition to having patients that have had multiple relapses or have had multiple therapies that have not worked for them, they have actually seen quite striking results with CAR T therapies. And there's quite a lot of continued development in this space, how we can move CAR T therapies up in terms of when we're using them for some malignancies, but also using them for additional indications, such as in the autoimmune space. And so these are quite promising therapies, and we're quite happy that they are available to patients that need them.
Dr. Yeku, I'd like to turn to you now. You're a medical oncologist who's worked with gynecologic malignancies. You've done a lot of research with CAR T. Why?
I think the prospect that a patient can receive a one-time dose of a drug that goes into their body, eradicates disease, goes to sleep in almost a memory-like fashion, and then reawakens whenever the cancer cells tries to divide again, I think that hope and that promise is something too bright to be left on the table. In many of our solid tumors, where again, we administer cycle after cycle of chemotherapy, having some sort of treatment where we can give a one-time dose to effectively cure patients or at least give them very durable control is something that's of very high interest. And that's why we continue to do research on CAR T cells in solid tumors.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. So your research is in solid tumors. We've seen some promise here. Talk a little bit about what you have seen.
Some examples of some solid tumors are neuroblastoma, which traditionally has been a very difficult to treat solid tumor. And very recently, it was published in the New England Journal of Medicine that you could actually derive CAR T cells that will seek out these tumors, bind to them, and really reduce these tumors, not just lead to a clinical effect of making the tumors smaller, but these patients actually get their lives back. And I think being able to replicate that in other solid tumors is the goal. Giving a treatment that will not only lead to disease control, but also lead to people living meaningful lives after treatment.
So you're working with gynecologic tumors. Can you tell us a little bit more about your trials and your research?
Absolutely. So the way CAR T cells work is that we need to define the antigen that we're going to teach the CAR to recognize. So we need to know where it's going to go and how to recognize the tumor. And each solid tumor, each tumor type, has its own different flag or its own different antigen or zip code that we use to derive antibodies to train or to modify the CAR T cells. In gynecologic cancers, we have our toolkit of various antigens, and we've been working on finding the one that's expressed on most amount of tumors, so that way the largest amount of patients can benefit. So within that toolkit, there's been a lot of clinical trials, many of them are very early, where we've been step-by-step trying to refine the process so we can translate some of this benefit and some of the success that we've seen with hematologic cancers and multiple myeloma to other solid tumors, inclusive of gynecologic cancers.
So CAR T is fairly new. It was approved in 2017. The FDA has recently found out about rare cases of secondary cancers that have occurred. How much do we understand about the role of CAR T in unleashing these secondary cancers? And where are there still questions?
I think it's best to say that in at least some of the cases, and I think it'll become clearer in the next months, that the lymphoma is occurring in a background of the CAR T. So it seems that that is a major part of what's driving things. But that doesn't mean that it's what's responsible for all of these. And so sorting this out is really going to be critical.
So I'm wondering, Dr. Verdun, how does the FDA see what's going on here?
We started to see a little bit of a pattern that was a bit concerning. So some of these T-cell malignancies that were seen after patients received CAR T therapies, one concerning part of it was the amount of time. So within weeks to a few months, we saw T-cell malignancies that happened in patients that had received the therapy for a different type of cancer. So the timing of it was a bit concerning to us. And then there were some of these malignancies that were positive for the CAR T construct in their malignancy. Now, the problem here is that this is not routinely tested. And so we're limited by the testing that's done. And even in situations where it was tested, potentially the tissue that was gathered, there wasn't enough sample there, or there were some problems potentially with the assay. So all of those malignancies that we saw have not been tested necessarily. But we do have some that were tested that were CAR T positive. And so those two components for us said that there may be a relationship here. And we feel at FDA that there is an obligation to notify the public of these things. What we have also said and made very clear that we think that the benefits outweigh the risk of the therapies currently. So meaning that we're not pulling anything from the market. We don't think that that's where we are with this, but we do think that it is something that we need to make the public aware of.
And can you talk a little bit more about this notification process and what it entails?
From a policy standpoint, there are limitations to what we can require. But from an FDA standpoint, one of those pieces is going to be changes to the label to inform providers and patients about this as a risk. And we've had conversations specifically with companies about information gathering and making sure that those patients that they can capture, that they're correctly capturing things in a manner where we will get information
But CAR T is already on the market. It's used by tens of thousands of cancer patients. How does notification work for them?
The post-market setting is a bit tricky that way, because if a patient is on clinical trials, which we do have some that are, as part of these therapies and their approvals, we do have 15-year follow-up on some of these patients. But for the post-market setting, where they're not on a trial, that has to be something where we are having direct conversations with those sponsors to encourage people that are giving those therapies to then report those back to the company, and hopefully they can provide some instruction if needed about how to gather samples and otherwise. So it's complex.
So you're saying that if I'm giving this to my patient and it's not a trial, it's not mandatory to report if I see a secondary cancer?
That is correct.
So what do we do about that? You know, how is that something we need to change, or we need to be aware of it, that this is voluntary?
The system itself is not set up such that we, right now, for things that are approved, that we can compel mandatory reporting. We just don't have that system in the United States set up in that way. Although we do have very good relationships with companies where we can have these conversations and figure out ways that we can do the right thing and try to get this information in the best way we can.
So all of these gene therapies come with risks. Can you speak to some of the reasons for those?
Right now, the way we manufacture CAR T cells is we essentially put a virus in to bring in the genetic construct, a gene therapy vector that's either a lentivirus or a retrovirus. Those can go into active areas of the genome, and that means occasionally it could go into the wrong place. And so it was not surprising that you could possibly see these secondary malignancies. Right now, I think we still don't know how frequent they are. They don't seem to be very frequent at all. The challenge for us is understanding the rate of these malignancies that are due to the CAR T, distinguishing them from a background rate of T cell lymphomas that can occur in individuals who have previously had B-cell lymphomas. So there's going to be a fair amount of sorting out that will happen. The good news is that right now, for those who need these products, the risk is greatly outweighed by the potential benefits.
But that may be a different story when we develop more uses for CAR T, right?
As we see these therapies move into earlier lines of treatment, and as we see them move into non-malignant uses, such as for the treatment of rheumatologic diseases like lupus, there we want to make sure we understand the safety and the potential risks, because the risk-benefit could change depending on the underlying disease being treated.
So Dr. Yaku, you've been working on CAR T a long time in your career. What were you thinking when you heard about these secondary cancers? And what were your colleagues thinking around this?
I think, just like Dr. Marks mentioned, it's something that we've always known could happen, especially with the lenti and the retroviral constructs, just based on the behavior of these things. So seeing these were not a surprise in some ways. And I'll remind you, in solid tumor malignancies, many of our chemotherapies cause secondary cancers. The mechanisms are different. The timing is different, as Dr. Verdun called out. So these are risks and benefits that we've always discussed with our patients as part of an informed consent. And really, this information just rolls right into that informed consent process. The benefits for these treatments, and the same thing when we give chemo, really significantly outweigh the risks. But it's important, of course, that the patients know what these risks are. And as the physician in the room, we help them contextualize this risk. Now we just have information that this particular theoretical risk can actually happen. The true incidence is unknown. We're still learning about the mechanisms. And all of this really comes to bear when we discuss with the patient and why we still think, for the vast majority of them, they need these therapies.
And I understand in this context, in the oncology context, if I'm a patient and I am going to die without it. I am going to use it. But as we understand, this therapy has potential for other diseases. So how do you counsel physicians at this juncture about the risks and benefits around their patients?
In terms of other settings, I think that's why this is paramount. It's trying to get an understanding, you know, as Dr. Yeku said, that there is an informed consent type of process in oncology. But when you're making decisions about using CARs, for example, in first line setting or in potentially lupus or diabetes or other things, I think that that's extremely important to make sure that those patients are informed about those risks. And so there is a significant amount of conversation in the field about how to balance this all. I really don't think we have an answer today, but there really are conversations that are going on in each field where CARs are being developed.
Dr. Yeku, did you want to add something there?
I think putting a name on it and bringing it to light, you know, helps science do what science does best,
right,
which is understand the problem and iterate. So it might feel like CAR T cells have been around for a long time, but it's relatively new technology. And people are working on better, different ways of making these CAR T cells, where, you know, one can imagine in the very near future, there might be iterations that might be safer or more tolerable to benign or non-cancer applications. So I think the beauty about this is that now that we're starting to understand this more, we can start to iterate and reiterate around how we make these CAR T cells and have conversations about what's appropriate for what indication.
So where do we go from here?
I would say that I don't think this is anything shocking. As we have more gene therapies, genetically modified cell therapies, it would have been remarkable, almost unbelievable, if we wouldn't have seen some side effects. I think what we're seeing right now is us having the natural course of things. What's happening is happening correctly. Our surveillance systems are working. And I think what we found is a very modest safety signal here that doesn't substantially change the current use of these products. When they need to be used, they should be used because the benefits outweigh the risks. But I think this is something that's going to happen as we have more genetic therapies. We will learn things. We may see side effects, and it's our job to assess that the benefits continue to outweigh the risks as they do here.
I would just add to what Dr. Mark said is that we really need a commitment from both providers, companies, and patients to continue the much needed work of follow-up and to ensure that we have a full understanding of these quite exciting products. From a regulatory perspective, we really want to get things to patients as fast as we can, especially where it shows promise in areas where there's significant need. And oncology is definitely one of those spaces. But the ongoing work of making sure that we're following these patients long-term, both in clinical trials and outside of them, is really a commitment that we need. And I think that this just highlights that.
Dr. Yeku?
I agree. I think vigilance is important. Looking at these side effects, not writing things off, reporting, those are very, very important aspects of things that we've always done and things that we'll continue to do from a provider or prescriber point of view. And I think, again, stressing that the benefits still significantly outweigh the risks, as with a lot of our therapies.
Thank you all so very, very much.
Thank you so much. And it's really been a pleasure. Thank you again.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
That's Dr. Oludapu Yeku. He's a medical oncologist at Massachusetts General Hospital and an associate editor at NEJM Evidence. And Dr. Nicole Verdun. She's director of the Office of Therapeutic Products at the FDA. And Dr. Peter Marks. He's director of the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research at the FDA. We had help from deputy editors Dr. Lindsay Baden and Dr. Dan Longo. Our managing editor is Deborah Molina. Mike Toda is our engineer. Next time, relief for the world's number one inherited heart condition, which can strike at any age.
What this study did was it put a lot of emphasis on something that the regulatory agencies, the FDA, has been putting a lot of weight on, which is how patients feel matters.
That's next time on Intention to Treat from the New England Journal of Medicine. I'm Rachel Gottbauer.